Good morning. Last week we started our study of Pirkei Avos by discussing a little bit about the introduction to the Pirkei Avos as a whole, and we also spoke about the Mishnah from Sanhedrin, which is traditionally used as an introduction to the chapters of Pirkei Avos, Kol Yisrael Yeshlem Chelek Le'olam Haba, that every Jew has a share in the world to come. So that was last week's discussion. This week I wanted to start with the actual first Mishnah of Pirkei Avos. If you have the Article Hebrew English, it's page 544. It says Perek Aleph, Mishnah Aleph. If you don't have the Article Hebrew English, it's still Mishnah Aleph, Perek Aleph, but just the page is going to be a different page. So the Mishnah starts off, Moshe kibel Torah miSinai. Moshe Rabbeinu received the Torah from Har Sinai. Umesara liYoshua, he transmitted the Torah to Yehoshua. Yehoshua leZakenim. Yehoshua then transmitted the Torah to the Zakenim, to the elders. Before I should explain, who are these elders exactly? So we know that the Tanakh and Sefer Shoftim speaks about how there were Zakenim, there were elders who were the successors to Yehoshua. That the Jewish people not only did not engage in idolatry during the reign of Yehoshua, but even during the reign of the elders who followed Yehoshua, they did not engage in idolatry. And more broadly, Mefarshim say that all of the leaders of the Jewish people who are referenced in Sefer Shoftim are included in this rubric of the Zakenim. So in other words, Yehoshua got the Torah from Moshe, he passed it on to the Zakenim, to the leaders of the Jewish people who were included in the judges, the Shoftim. Uzakenim l'Neviim, the Zakenim, the elders, gave over the Torah to the Neviim, to the prophets. Who were the prophets? So Chazal tell us that there were 48 prophets during the biblical period. They included people like David HaMelech, like Shlomo HaMelech, certainly some of the Neviim that we read about in Sefer Melachim, Eliyahu, Elisha, you know, certainly going a little bit later on in history, Yeshayahu, Hosea, Yirmiyahu. These individuals, not only were they prophets, in other words, not only were they conveying the word of God to the people to get them to do tshuva, but they were also links in the Mesorah of Klal Yisrael. They were links in the the transmission of the tradition of the of Torah, passing on the learning the Torah and passing on the Torah from generation to generation. And finally, the prophets transmitted the Torah to the men of the great assembly, the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. Who were the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah? So there was a body of individuals, 120 to be exact, who lived around the period of the rebuilding of the second Beis HaMikdash. That group of people was referred to as the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. Lahavdil, when the Knesset, when the State of Israel was started and they wanted to have a political body that they'd refer to as the parliament, so they adopted the idea of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. They called the parliament the Knesset, and they set up 120 seats, you know, in the Knesset to correspond to the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, who were composed of 120 individuals. Nonetheless, although it's nice to have the historical parallel, it's important to make certain distinctions between Anshei Knesset HaGedolah and the Knesset. The most obvious ones, obviously, is the Knesset is a political body and not a religious body, and we'll just leave it at that. But, even in terms of the structure, the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah was not a body that had 120 members at any given time and that met as a group. The Anshei Knesset HaGedolah was a group of individuals who lived over a period of years. Over the period of those years, there were 120 individuals who were part of the Knesset HaGedolah, but it's not clear that at any given time, if you would have sent out a text message to all 120 members, that they were all living at the same time and they could come together and have a convocation. Meaning over the course of years, 120 people were recognized as having this leadership stature within Klal Yisrael. But again, whether they met as a body at all times, that 120 members would gather at any given time, that does not seem to be the case.
How long was Anshei Knesset
HaGadolah? Oh, so let's first about talk about who were the members of the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah. We'll get a little bit of a sense of when they lived exactly. So some of the Nevi'im who lived in the very beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash period, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi, are considered to be members of the Knesset HaGadolah. Haggai and Zechariah lived at the time that the second Beis HaMikdash was being rebuilt. Chazal identify Malachi with being Ezra HaSofer. Mordechai of Purim fame was a member of the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah. Zerubbabel, who was the grandson of Yechonyo, one of the last kings of the Malchus Yehuda, Zerubbabel ben Shaltiel, went back to Eretz Yisrael and started rebuilding it after Cyrus Koresh gave the right to the Jews to go back. So those are some of the people associated with the Knesset HaGadolah. The last of the Knesset HaGadolah, as we'll see in Mishnah Beis, was Shimon HaTzadik, right? It says Shimon HaTzadik and Beis, Hoya Mishiyari Knesset HaGadolah. He was from the last of the people of the Knesset HaGadolah. Chazal tell us that Shimon HaTzadik was the Kohen Gadol in Yerushalayim when Alexander the Great swept into Eretz Yisrael and conquered the Persian Empire and brought it under Greek control. So in other words, just to place the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah historically, the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah were the leaders of the Jewish people during what we can call the Persian period. It was after the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, which was done by the Babylonians, and during that period of time when the Persian Empire ruled over the Jewish people, ruled over Eretz Yisrael, the Jews found themselves somewhere in the Persian Empire. The leaders of the Jewish people, both in Eretz Yisrael and in Bavel, people like Mordechai, who was in Paras, who was in Persia, the leaders of the Jewish people, both in Eretz Yisrael as well as in the Golos, were referred to collectively as the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah. How long was the Persian period of time? So the traditional chronology is not particularly long, 34 years. In other words, that was that period of time that the Jews were ruled by leaders of the Persian Empire. There's a lot of discussion about the traditional chronology, but the traditional chronology of the Persian period is that there were basically three kings who ruled over the Persian Empire during this period of time. There was Koresh, there was Ahasuerus, and there was Daryavish, and basically already after that, the kingdom was conquered by Alexander the Great. Parenthetically, I mentioned the traditional chronology. There's a lot of discussion about that chronology because secular historians seem to believe that that period was a lot longer than the 34 years. Rav Shimon Schwab Zatzal has an article where he talks about how to reconcile that issue. But Lemaisa, we're talking about the leaders of the Jewish people during the Persian period, however long that period was exactly. Al-Koponim, so let's just go back and talk about some of the things that are here in the Mishnah. So the Mishnah starts off by listing what is referred to as the Shalshelis HaKabbalah, the chain of tradition, right? This is the chain of the receiving of the Torah at Sinai and the transmitting of the Torah to the leaders of the Torah, the what we call the Chachmei HaMesorah, the Chachamim, the sages who preserve the Mesorah, who preserve the tradition, transmit the tradition. We're given a sense of the chain of transmission through numerous generations. And indeed, what's going to happen through the rest of Perek Aleph is that Perek Aleph very neatly traces the Mesorah, the passing on of the tradition from generation to generation. So just to take a little bit of a sneak peek ahead, Mishnah Beis says that the last of the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah was Shimon HaTzadik. And then Mishnah Gimel says that Shimon HaTzadik passed on the tradition to Antigonus Ishsocho. And then Mishnah Dalet talks about how Antigonus Ishsocho passed on the tradition to Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan. And then Mishnah Vav tells us about how Yoshua ben Prachya and Nitai Harbeli received the tradition from them. And basically throughout the rest of the first perek, we're given a map, so to speak, of the passing on of the leadership of Torah and the Mesorah of Torah from one generation to the next. So this clearly is very, very important. They quote from the Chafetz Chaim that if one just contemplates this chain of tradition, it's a tremendous source of strength for our emunah. Because after all, you know, if we can trace the links in the chain of tradition back to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai, so that makes the whole reception of Torah something which is more real to us. You know, if it's sort of, yeah, you know, I don't know where we got this from, somebody wrote in a sefer somewhere that we should do this, I don't know, it could be, you know, if it's vague, you know, it's less compelling. But if we can point a finger and say, you know, this one received from this one received from this one, all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai, it gives us a very real sense that this Mesorah is something real, it's tangible, we can point at the various links in the chain, and it gives us a great deal of confidence that what we're receiving is accurately passed on from Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. Just I'll mention the following. The two of the great Rishonim actually speak out the chain of tradition. They delineate the chain of tradition even more than the very small ways presented here in Pirkei Avos. So the Rambam, in his introduction to the Mishnah Torah, traces the transmission of the tradition from Moshe Rabbeinu all the way through the time of the Gemara, step by step. Again, here it just says, you know, Moshe got it, he gave it to Yoshua, Yoshua gave it to the Zekanim gave it to the Nevi'im. So the Rambam is much more explicit. He traces, you know, this one gave it to this one gave it to that one. You know, he really traces it all the way through the Gemara. Rav Menachem HaMeiri, whom we mentioned last week, who lived in Provence in the 1300s, goes even further than that. Rav Menachem HaMeiri traces the chain of tradition for Moshe Rabbeinu all the way to his own time. In other words, into the early Middle Ages. You know, this Gaon gave it to this Gaon, and this Gaon gave it to that Gaon, and he really traces the whole Shalshelas HaKabbalah, the whole chain of tradition, not just to some distant past, but the Meiri says, I can show you how the Torah went from Moshe Rabbeinu all the way to our own generation. Which, again, if one really thinks about that, it gives one a tremendous sense of confidence in, you know, what it is that we're doing. You know, we can trace back this Mesorah all the way to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. It makes us feel in a very vivid way like we're part of the tradition.
When you say Mesorah, you talk, when Moshe came down to the Lukos, did he also come down with the Kisah? I mean, can you... Torah, you know, Kisah, right. Did he actually write it, or did he write it like after Matan Torah, and then there were like 12 tribes had it?
Okay, yeah, so that's a very basic question, and let's talk about that for a little bit. Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai, right? Moshe got the Torah at Har Sinai. What did he get? Right, so there are a lot of people out there, even within the Frum camp, who believes that, you know, he got the Ten Commandments, got the Aseres HaDibros, he got those Luchos, kind of left them on top of the Aron for everybody to see, and that's it. You know, that was the extent of it. That's very much not the sum total of what he got, you know, from our perspective. Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai received the entire Torah, which means he got the Torah Shebiktav, the written Torah, and the Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral Torah. But let's explain what that means, because even making that statement, while it's true, doesn't really capture the fullness of what Moshe Rabbeinu received. So very often people ask the following question, right? Let's first start with the Torah Shebiktav. Moshe Rabbeinu received the entire Torah, not just the Ten Commandments, he got the whole Torah at Har Sinai. So people very often ask the following question, almost like a brain teaser. So Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai with the whole Torah. So then why did he hit the rock? What, he didn't read till the end of the story? Didn't he see that in Parshas Chukas it was going to say that he would hit the rock and he wouldn't go into Eretz Yisrael? Why did he send out the Meraglim? Why did he send out the spies? Didn't he see that in Parshas Shlach Moshe Rabbeinu would send out the Meraglim, they'd go into Eretz Yisrael, and they'd come back with a bad report, and that would really be very bad for the Jewish people? So if he knew the end of the story, you know, if he read the book, right? So why did all these things play out the way that they did? He should have changed history. I mean, it's an interesting thing to contemplate. So the simple explanation to that is that Moshe Rabbeinu did not, when we say that Moshe Rabbeinu got the Torah shebiksav at Har Sinai, it does not mean that the Ribono Shel Olam presented him with a Sefer Torah the way we have a Sefer Torah today. By the end of the 40 years in the desert, Moshe Rabbeinu did indeed present to Klal Yisrael a Sefer Torah the way we have it today. However, there is a machlokas in the Gemara in Gittin how the Torah was written down. There are two opinions in the Gemara in Gittin how the Torah Shebiksav, the way we have it, was written down. One opinion is Torah Megillah Megillah Nitna, which means the Torah Shebiksav, the way we have it, was given to Moshe Rabbeinu gradually over the course of the 40 years that the Jews were in the desert. So, for instance, Rashi writes in Parshas Mishpatim that when Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai, he already had Bereishis and half of Sefer Shmos the way we have it, which he then shared with the Jewish people. The Torah refers to that Chumash and a half as the Sefer HaBris, the Book of the Covenant. Right, they cast Sefer HaBris by Yikra Ba'oznei Ha'am, it says. He took the Sefer HaBris, the Book of the Covenant, and he read it in the ears of the people. That seems to follow the opinion that the Torah was given, you know, chapter by chapter to Moshe Rabbeinu as the events unfolded, you know, in the desert. Right, so in other words, according to that opinion, for sure, you know, Parsha Shlach was only given to Moshe Rabbeinu after Parsha Shlach happened, meaning he didn't read the book before, you know, before the movie came out. He didn't read the book before the events happened. The book was only given to Moshe Rabbeinu after the events happened to write down. The other opinion in the Gemara says, no, Torah Chasuma Nitna. The Torah was given as a closed book to Moshe Rabbeinu, which means what? Which means the Torah in the written form we have it today was only given to Moshe Rabbeinu at the very end of the 40 years. So neither opinion holds that Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai with a Sefer Torah the way we have it today. It would seem pretty straightforward that Moshe Rabbeinu did not know what was going to happen before it happened. Again, it would be very strange to imagine that Moshe Rabbeinu knew that the Meraglim was a bad idea, but he just had to do it anyway because that was the script, and that Moshe Rabbeinu knew that hitting the rock was a bad idea, but he had to do it anyway because that's what it says in Parshas Chukas. You know, it's sort of bizarre. It takes away the whole idea of Moshe Rabbeinu's free will, you know, to assume that all of this was scripted and that Moshe Rabbeinu just followed the script. Okay, so either the Torah was given chapter by chapter throughout the desert years, or the Torah was given at the end of the 40 years. So what do we mean that Moshe Rabbeinu got the Torah Shebiksav from Har Sinai? You know, in fact, we're probably familiar with a famous Rashi. Famous Rashi means that I'm going to say it over now, so be famous. Right? There's a famous Rashi at the beginning of Parshas Behar, where Rashi asks, the Torah says, "Vaydabra Hashem el Moshe Behar Sinai Lemor." When introducing the laws of Shemitah, the Torah says God spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai and he taught him the laws of Shemitah. So Rashi asks famously, "Ma'inyan Shemitah eitzel Har Sinai?" Why say Bahar Sinai when talking about the laws of Shemitah? Says Rashi, it's to teach us that just as the laws of Shemitah were revealed at Har Sinai, so to all of the Torah with all of its details and all of its minor aspects, everything was revealed to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. Okay, so how do you square that with the statement that the Torah was written down only either piecemeal or at the end of the 40 years? So the answer would seem to be as follows. Again, it's a very, very basic thing, and it makes sense when you think about it, but you just have to think about it. The content of Torah And specifically, the legal content of Torah was given to Moshe Rabbeinu entirely at Har Sinai. So in other words, all of the halachos were given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. There was nothing that was sprung on Moshe Rabbeinu at some later point that he didn't know about. However, the writing of the Torah took place not at Har Sinai, but either over the course of the 40 years or at the end of the 40 years. Meaning, although Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai was already given the laws that pertain to, let's say, the Yom Tovim, which are recorded in Parshas Emor, he knew the material, he knew the fact that there were various Yom Tovim throughout the Jewish year, and he knew all the halachos of those Yom Tovim, but the actual Parshas Emor was only written down in its form, you know, at some point later, or, you know, either over the course of the 40 years or at the end of the 40 years. But the content of those parshios was given to Moshe Rabbeinu already at Har Sinai. The narrative parts of Torah were not given to Moshe Rabbeinu until they happened. Right? In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu knew already at Har Sinai that you had to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, but he didn't know at that point that sending out the Meraglim would be a really bad idea. But after the story with the Meraglim happened, Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, write this down, and then that which Moshe Rabbeinu wrote down became part of Torah. Yeah.
So he got all this in the Torah, and he wrote it down for him?
So in other words, we know he was up in Har Sinai for 120 days total when he was at Har Sinai.
He went down the first 40 days.
Right.
Like Hashem essentially giving him everything. And right. Then he went up for another 40 days. I'm like, how did that work?
Right, what right. Yeah. Right, so it could be that the first 40 days were critical for the receiving of the Torah, meaning, you know, the second and third sets of 40 days seem to have been more Moshe Rabbeinu beseeching the Ribbono Shel Olam not to destroy the Jewish people after the Chet HaEgel. The giving of the Torah may have been concentrated on those first 40 days, you know, that he went up. Again, I don't know. Right. But it's not clear that Moshe Rabbeinu then got new information during that second period of time. But, you know, sometime during that period, Moshe Rabbeinu is told all of Torah. That was all of the legal parts of Torah. You know, the story parts of Torah unfold as they unfold. And then Moshe Rabbeinu is told, you know, either during the 40 years or at the end of the 40 years to write that down. And then that becomes part of Torah later on. When we say Moshe Rabbeinu got all of Torah at Har Sinai, it means really focusing on the legal parts of the Torah itself. We also believe that Moshe Rabbeinu got the Torah Sheba'al Peh, the oral Torah, at Har Sinai. That means even things that were not recorded in the Torah Shebiktav nonetheless were revealed to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. So to take one example, right, the Torah Shebiktav in Parshas Re'eh talks about shechting animals, and the Torah there says you should shech kasher tzivisticha as I have commanded you. And yet we look through the Torah Shebiktav and we don't find anywhere where the Torah spells out what the procedure is for shechting an animal. There are no diagrams, you know, there's no no gory descriptions, you know, it's nothing, right? Maybe we're a little thankful for that, right? So that's a classic example of the Torah Sheba'al Peh, where the Torah Shebiktav itself references there was material and information given to Moshe Rabbeinu, which was not written down in the Torah itself. You, Moshe Rabbeinu, I told directly how to shecht an animal. So the pasuk says, "V'shochatta Torah kasher tzivisticha," you should shecht it as I commanded you. You know, refer to what I told you. Or the fact that tefillin have to be black, the fact that tefillin have to be square, the fact that tefillin are made in the way in which they're made, you know, none of that is in the Torah Shebiktav, in the written Torah directly. All it says is Ukshartam la'osna yodecha v'ahilu totofos v'neinecha, which is really very vague, if you think about it. It's very hard to, on your own, you would not extrapolate from there that you have to wear tefillin. So, you know, all of these details about how the tefillin are made, how the tefillin is supposed to be worn, etc., 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 everything was given over to Moshe Rabbeinu orally. More than that, Chazal say that kol ma shetalmid vosik osid l'chadesh nemar l'moshe misinai, meaning everything that a well-seasoned student would come up with as a chiddush at later points in history, and as any new insight into Torah that is going to be said any time throughout the future generations, all of that was told to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. So what does that mean? So in other words, anytime somebody comes out with a sefer, right, if it's a good sefer, so all the content in that sefer was already taught to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. So what does that mean? I mean, that was a really busy 40 days. I mean, he went through everything. How is that possible? I mean, okay, we understand that when we talk about the revelation of the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu, we're talking about things that are really beyond our full comprehension. But even granted that it's beyond our full comprehension, the notion that every chiddush that's going to be ever written at any point in history, that's good, that's correct, you know, was given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai, is just hard to wrap one's head around. Yeah.
It has to be that he got the methods of how all these things are derived, and that's how any future thing could possibly come
right. Out. Okay, so let's tell a story from the Gemara that illustrates that in a very, very beautiful way. The Gemara Menachos tells the story of how the Ribbono Shel Olam revealed to Moshe Rabbeinu many of the things that would happen in the future, and Moshe Rabbeinu, looking into the future, saw that there'd be this great individual by the name of Rabbi Akiva. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, you know, he looks like a very chosh of a person, I'd like to kind of see him in action. So the Ribbono Shel Olam says fine, and he transports Moshe Rabbeinu to the classroom of Rabbi Akiva. And the Gemara tells the following story. Rabbi Akiva is up in front of the classroom and he's giving the shiur, and Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't follow. He doesn't understand what's going on. He doesn't recognize any of the things that Rabbi Akiva is saying. And finally, Moshe Rabbeinu is getting very frustrated and very upset. You know, how could it be? I mean, I'm Moshe Rabbeinu. I got the Torah, right? How is it that I'm sitting in the classroom of Rabbi Akiva and I don't understand what's going on? So finally, one of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva asks Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi, where did you get this idea from that you just told us? So Rabbi Akiva says, it was given over to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. And Moshe Rabbeinu breathes a big sigh of relief, and he says, oh, Baruch Hashem. So that's the story in the Gemara. So what does that Gemara mean? Right? If I was Moshe Rabbeinu at that point in the story, I would not breathe a big sigh of relief. I would sue Rabbi Akiva for plagiarism, right? I mean, you know, you're saying over all these things that I don't recognize, and you're attributing them to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. What does all of that mean? So the answer the Mefarshim says along the lines that Bani says, namely, Moshe Rabbeinu was given a series of tools of interpretation at Har Sinai. If you use those tools and you analyze the material that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu, by definition, you'll come up with new things, and you might even come up with new things that Moshe Rabbeinu himself wouldn't recognize. But since you legitimately followed the rules of interpretation, the methods of interpretation that were given to Moshe Rabbeinu, anything you come up with is implicit in the material that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? Again, we have to, in any discipline, let's say in the world of science, if later scientists come along and using the ideas that were developed by earlier scientists, they're able to make new discoveries. So the earlier scientists may not have known of those discoveries explicitly, but they laid the groundwork for being able to make those later discoveries. Everything was revealed to Moshe Rabbeinu, much of it explicitly, but much of it implicitly. As much of it was given to Moshe Rabbeinu, and then Moshe Rabbeinu was given a series of tools which he shared with Klal Yisrael. How do you mine the Torah in order to be able to come up with new insights and new interpretations and new explanations? And in that sense, everything was given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. I say this next part somewhat tongue-in-cheek. Whether Moshe Rabbeinu himself realized it or not, you know, this Torah was all given over to Moshe Rabbeinu, because the way to derive this Torah was given over to Moshe Rabbeinu. That's the Torah Sheba'al Peh, you know, which was revealed to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. Right? So that's that you know, is in a nutshell. I mean, it's a very, there's a lot more to talk about, but you know, when we talk about Moshe Rabbeinu being given Torah at Har Sinai, it means the Torah Shebiktav and the Torah Shebaal Peh in all of its fullness was given over to Moshe Rabbeinu, and then he transferred that, he transmitted that onto Yehoshua, and Yehoshua to the future generations. What does it mean that he transmitted it? He transmitted the knowledge that he knew, the huge amount of knowledge that he knew, and he also transmitted the tools of interpretation to Yehoshua, and then Yehoshua thereafter to the next generations. So the next generations, it wasn't just a matter of, you know, memorizing all the stuff that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu. It was about learning a methodology which would then be able to be applied to the material given to Moshe Rabbeinu, to be able to come up with new ideas, but new ideas that were really old ideas, new ideas that were implicit in all of the Torah that had been given to Moshe Rabbeinu already. That's all Moshe Kibel Torah Mi Sinai.
So, what about like the Akkadim?
Oh, so...
That was like later, like let's say, you know, he wrote later, and then he got...
When you say Akkadim, what do you mean by Akkadim?
You know,
the narrative
the
portions of...
Yeah, the Mishalim, and the, you know, all that.
No, but so what do you mean? You mean the narrative portions of the Torah Shebiktav, or you mean the things that the Gemara says about, you know, different philosophical things?
Not that familiar with, you know, never learned the Gemara inside. Some things like, let's say, I don't know, you know, the mashal that we learn, you know, the splitting, you know, the splitting of the sea was what Hashem did, but some people could interpret it a different way, but that's not how.
Right. Okay, so let me try to address part of that question. It's a tricky question because we have to really delineate what's what. Clearly, there was a lot given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai, which was not just legal in nature, but was more what we'd call hashkafic in nature. So, for instance, when we find statements in Chazal about what the nature of Olam Haba is all about, I mean, how does anybody know, right? How did Chazal know what Olam Haba is about, right? Almost by definition, right? You know, how would they know what Olam Haba? When Chazal talk about what Yemos HaMashiach is going to be like, how do we know all of that, you know? So that, at least a sizable portion of that, was also among those things revealed to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai, right? In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't just get, again, to put it in contemporary terms, it's not just that the Ribbono Shel Olam handed him a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch at Har Sinai and said, here, this is what you're supposed to do. As we saw a minute ago, HaKadosh Baruch Hu also gave Moshe Rabbeinu the tools how to interpret Torah, but in a sense, the Ribbono Shel Olam also gave Moshe Rabbeinu the Mesilas Yesharim at Har Sinai. I don't mean to say that he got the text of the Mesilas Yesharim from Har Sinai, but the ideas of the Mesilas Yesharim, the hashkafos, the midos, you know, how a person should be a better person, that's not just that the Ramchal who wrote Mesilas Yesharim kind of thought it up on his own. You know, all of these sources in Chazal that teach us how to be good people, that teach us, you know, things about basic hashkafos, you know, basic traditions about the way malachim work and all of these sort of things, all of these philosophical ideas were also taught to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai, right? So that's all part of the Kabbalah. It wasn't just halacha, he was given hashkafa at Har Sinai as well. That leads us actually into an interesting comment, a very fundamental comment about the Mishnah itself that we're learning. Now, all of this is very important. Moshe Kibel Torah Mi Sinai. I mean, as we can see, you know, we can talk for a good period of time just about the importance of this idea, because this idea of the Kabbalah HaTorah and the giving over the Torah from generation to generation really is fundamental to our belief of to our Jewish beliefs. In other words, you know, if a person doesn't believe Chalila that the Torah was given at Har Sinai, and he doesn't believe that the Torah that we have today is accurate in terms of being given at Har Sinai, so that person is missing one of the fundamental beliefs of Judaism. He's not going to be able to function as a Torah observant Jew properly if he doesn't believe wholeheartedly that the Torah we have today was the Torah given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. It's so fundamental that the Mefarshim asked the following question: why did the Mishnayos stick this in Pirkei Avos Now, Pirkei Avos is about two-thirds of the way through Shas. Why not start Shas with the statement, Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai? Right? The beginning of Shas talks about what time you're supposed to say Kriya Shema in the evening. That's an important thing. But it's arguably even more important to know that God gave us the Torah and that it was transmitted accurately from generation to generation. That's kind of basic. So why not start with that? So there's an interesting answer given by Rav Ovadia Mibar Tanura, right? Not just the wine, but a commentary on the Rav Ovadia Mibar Tanura. He came from Bar Tanura in Italy, and he wrote in the 1600s, he wrote what's probably considered to be the most basic commentary on the Mishnayos, sort of what Rashi is to Chumash, the Bar Tanura is to Mishnayos. So the Bar Tanura writes, Rav Ovadia Bar Tanura writes, that the reason the Mishnah writes Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai here in the beginning of Pirkei Avos is because the person might say as follows. We're going to go through Pirkei Avos and we'll see a lot of wise statements about how a person should be a moral, ethical person. Truth is, says the Bar Tanura, you know, the other cultures and other religions also have wise statements about how to be a moral and ethical person, right? Confucius said this, Confucius said that, okay, you know? And some of them are even similar to the things we're going to learn about in Pirkei Avos. So says the Bar Tanura, a person might say as follows. What did Moshe Rabbeinu get at Har Sinai? He got all of the specific legal ideas which are clearly unique to the Jewish people, right? Moshe Rabbeinu got at Har Sinai the laws of Shabbos and the laws of Kashrus and all of that. But one might have said, what we're going to learn in Pirkei Avos about how to be a good, moral, ethical person, that's not divine revelation. That's just wise statements from the rabbis. Right? The rabbis were wise people. In addition to getting the Torah from Har Sinai, you know, they were also wise people. So these are wise statements which they made about life. You know, as Lahavdil, you would think that they're not so different from the wise sayings of Confucius or something of that nature. So says the Bar Tanura, that's why Davka Pirkei Avos starts off with Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai. Don't think that what Moshe Rabbeinu got at Har Sinai was just keep Shabbos, keep kosher, you know, bring karbanos, you know, all these things that are, you know, clearly, uniquely Jewish. If Chazal say the way to be a good person is to think about, I don't know, to take one example from Pirkei Avos, think about where you came from, where you're going, and before whom you're going to give judgment, that's not just a wise statement from the Chachamim, that's Torah that was revealed to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. Right? So again, to Barbara's point, you know, a lot of what we're going to read in Pirkei Avos might be described as agada. You know, it's certainly not halachic in the sense that, let's say, reading Kitzur Shulchan, you know, it reads differently than reading a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch when we read Pirkei Avos. It's more general, moral, and ethical directives, you know, which one might have expected to hear from a non-Jewish scholar, a non-Jewish moralist, or the like. So one might have been tempted to say, these are just wise ideas, they're not necessarily revelation. Comes the beginning of Pirkei Avos and says, no, Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai, and that includes all of the things which we're going to learn about today. Right? All the things that we're going to learn about in Pirkei Avos, even though they may seem to be agadic in a certain kind of way.
Into the stories, like in the Gemara, they have all kinds of like tales and stories that almost seem like otherworldly or like totally different than a narrative book of gracious, like the Malachim game or whatever.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about those things. You know, there are many stories in the Gemara that some of them seem just regular historical. You know, they're historical accounts that are preserved in the Gemara. There are definitely stories in the Gemara that seem to be fantastic. You know, fantastic in the literal sense of the term. I mean, they just seem, ooh, you know, like very, very strange ideas. You know, I mean, there's a series of Gemaras in Bava Basra called the Rabba Bar Bar Chana Gemaras, where Rabba Bar Bar Chana, who was a world traveler, talks about how he went around the world and I saw this strange thing and that strange thing. He talks about, to give one example, I saw an island that turned out to be just some huge fish whose top was sticking out over the surface of the water, and people were on this island, and then all of a sudden the island turned over and the big fish, you know, started swimming somewhere, you know, right, things that seem to us to be fantastic, you know, like something out of so the question is, all of those Gemaras that seem very fantastic, what are we to make of those Gemaras? So first of all, there is a debate as to whether those Gemaras are just literal stories. Okay, Rabbi Baruch Hanna was a world traveler. He saw a lot of weird things. You know, that's okay. Just letting you know. There is a tendency of many Mefarshim to take those Gemaras as allegories or metaphors for some greater ideas. Rav Aaron Feldman Shlitos, the Rosh Hashiva of Ner Yisrael in Baltimore, has a whole book that he wrote in English called The Juggler and the King, which is essentially a presentation of the Vilna Gaon's explanation of some of those strange Gemaras. That's what The Juggler and the King basically is. If you take the perspective that these agados are allegory, so then the question is, where do the lessons that they're trying to teach come from? So the Ramchal writes, he has an essay called Maimar al Ha'agados, an essay about agados, where the Ramchal writes that the lessons of those agados were revealed to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai, and the specific allegories that the rabbis used to convey those ideas are allegories they came up with in order to hide those ideas so that the average person would not be able to just come up with them on his own, right? Or would not be able to understand them without the benefit of a Rebbe who would teach him, right? You have to find a teacher in order to unlock these agados for the person, right? So, again, depending on how you understand, that's why it gets a little murky.
Someplace like that, if you believe it all, you're a fool, and if you don't believe it all, then you're out of
luck. Yeah. Who said that? One of the Chassidish Rebbes, I think, said that. Yeah. Right. No, but there's a lot of discussion how to understand agada in general. So, again, there are perspectives to say all of those agadas are just meant literally. You know, they're really weird stories. Okay, you know, truth is stranger than fiction. I mean, that is true. But, you know, there is a perspective that says that those are meant to convey ideas. And if you take that perspective, you know, those ideas may very well have been part of the revelation to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. There isn't a clear answer on that. That's why, you know, I can't address it firmly. But, you know, it may be the case that the ideas behind those agados were revealed to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. That may be the case. Okay. So we started Mishnah Aleph. There's a huge amount to talk about on Mishnah Aleph. Be'ezus Hashem, next week we'll continue with Mishnah Aleph, trying to unlock some more of the things that are here. And we look forward to seeing everybody then.